We are revising the first, second and third shloka of Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, first chapter. The first three shlokas are actually the introduction to Srimad Bhagavatam. So yesterday we discussed about the first shloka and today we'll discuss about the second. These three are very important shlokas. So second shloka you can say is the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam. Dharma prachita koitavo atra paramo nirmatsaranam satam vedam vastava matra vastu shivadam tapotrayam malanam Srimad Bhagavate mahamuni krite kingba paravishara saddo riddavo ruddhate atra kriti bhi shushushu bhi tatkhana. It's a very important shloka, as I mentioned earlier. So everybody should try to memorize this shloka. Translation: completely rejecting all religious activities which are materially motivated, this Bhagavad Puran propounds the highest truth, which is understandable by those devotees who are fully pure in heart. The highest truth is reality distinguished from illusion for the welfare of all. Such truth uproots the threefold miseries. This beautiful Bhagavatam, compiled by the great sage Vyasadeva in his maturity, is sufficient in itself for God realization. What is the need of any other scripture? As soon as one attentively and submissively hears the message of Bhagavatam, by this culture of knowledge, the Supreme Lord is established within his heart. So, literally, it means that when one becomes free from all material desires, then only his heart becomes purified. His heart becomes free from contamination, and the grossest form of that contamination is envy. So when one becomes detached, or when one gives up all the desire for material enjoyment, then only one becomes free from envy, and then only his heart becomes completely purified. And then only he becomes eligible to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Unless and until our heart is purified, we cannot possibly get to know Krishna or get to understand Krishna. We may practice, we may chant the holy name, or we may render devotional service in practice, but we won't develop genuine Krishna consciousness or love, genuine love for Krishna. And through that genuine love for Krishna alone can one understand Krishna. And that's what has been explained here. Vedam bastava matra vastu gets to realize, or gets to recognize the reality, real reality. And that is Shivadam. The word Shivadam means giver of peace and tranquility. This awareness of the Supreme Personality of Godhead gives us the peace of mind. The real peace of mind is attained only by Krishna consciousness. And that is tapotrayam unmulanam. That uproots the threefold miseries. There are threefold miseries. Those miseries are adhi atmik, adhi doibik, and adhi bhautik. Adhi atmik misery is the miseries caused by our body and mind, miseries caused by other living entities are called adhi bhautik, and miseries caused by the different controllers of the material nature, the demigods, are called the adhi doivik. So these are the threefold miseries, and every living entity is actually suffering these threefold miseries. Old or young, rich or poor, everyone is suffering from these threefold miseries. So that is the very basic state of material nature. Whoever is here is bound to suffer these threefold miseries. But when one gets to know Krishna, then these threefold miseries are totally uprooted. Tapotraya unmulanam. Unmulanam means uprooted. Then these miseries become ineffective. When one becomes a devotee of Krishna, when one begins to render devotional service unto Krishna, when one becomes aware of Krishna as the Supreme Absolute Truth, then these threefold miseries are mitigated. But what is the basic criterion, basic requirement for that? Basic requirement for coming to this platform of recognizing Krishna, understanding Krishna, and becoming free from all kinds of material miseries is dharma prachita koitavo. One must give up the koitavo dharma. Koitavo dharma means cheating religion, false religion. The religion that apparently appears, some activities that apparently appears to be like religion, religious activities, but actually they are not. So that has been described here as koitava dharma, cheating religion. And what are those cheating religions? So-called religious activities that are actually motivated by sense gratification. When you do something, apparently it appears to be like religion, but we want our sense gratification out of those activities. They are actually the activities prescribed in Karma Kanda and Jnana Kanda section of the Vedas. Karma Kanda section of the Vedas describe how to act for, how to act to fulfill our material desires. Different living entities have different desires. Some people want to be rich, some people want to be wise, some people want to have a beautiful wife, some people want to be very powerful, and so on and so forth. So these are all material desires. And the Karma Kanda actually gives us the prescription how to fulfill those material desires. And that is known as the Karma Kanda section of the Vedas. And then beyond Karma Kanda section of the Vedas, there is another section which is known as Jnana Kanda or knowledge section of the Vedas. And the ultimate consideration of this Jnana Kanda is liberation. And it has been pointed out that liberation also is a kind of sense gratification. Desire for liberation is also a kind of sense gratification. Either we want to cater to the demands of the senses, or we want to be completely free from the demands of the senses. Now both are actually pertaining to the senses, and that's why both are sense gratification. To enjoy with our senses, and then by realizing that by means of our senses we are simply receiving pain and suffering, then to be free from this suffering by means of liberation is also a kind of sense gratification. And actually it has been described that this is higher form of, or more intense form of sense gratification. Not higher, but more acute sense gratification. Liberation is actually even more acute sense gratification. Why? Because through this process of liberation, one wants to become one with God. One wants to become God. This liberation is known as what? What kind of liberation is this? Who knows? Sajityam. How many types of liberations are there? Five. What are they? What are those? One you have said, Sajitya. Anybody else? Sharupa, second. Then? Shalakya. Then? Samyupa. And then? The fifth one? Shashti. So there are five kinds of liberation.
First one is Sajitya. Then Samyutta, Sarupa, Sarupa, and then the fifth one. These are different kinds of liberation. Now, these four liberations are positive. But this one is negative. Why this Sajitya is considered to be negative? Right. They do not, this Sajitya Mukti, in this Sajitya Mukti there is no awareness of God. No. Awareness of Krishna. They want to become liberated, but in that liberation they do not have any awareness of Krishna. And why is that? That is because they lose their consciousness in that. They lose their consciousness in this liberation of salvation. They penetrate through the coverings of Maya. This material nature has eight coverings. And a person aspiring to be liberated this way by Sajitya Mukti, by means of their austerities and penances, they can penetrate through the coverings of Maya. But then they come in contact with the Brahma Jyoti. And when they come in contact with the Brahma Jyoti, the glaring effulgence of the Brahma Jyoti, due to the glaring effulgence of the Brahma Jyoti, they lose their consciousness. It has been compared to somebody who has been in a dark room for a very, very long time. Like all of a sudden if he is taken out and made to look at the midday sun, what will happen to his eyes? A man who has been in a dark room for years together, then all of a sudden you take him out and make him look at the sun, what happens? He becomes blind. Now this material nature is dark. This material nature is in eternal darkness. Everybody here are remaining in a region of darkness. But if they're all of a sudden taken to the spiritual effulgence, taken out of this material nature and made to look at the glaring effulgence of Brahma Jyoti, then immediately they actually become blinded. They lose all their consciousness. So that's what actually happens to to Mayavadis. And this has been described in a shloka that Jayanno Arobindaksha Bimukta Maninas Tajyasto Bhavad Abhishuddha Buddhayo Arujya Krichena Parang Padam Tato Patanti Adha Anadhita Yushmadam. Now when somebody, by means of austerities and penances, elevate themselves to Param Pada,
the spiritual nature, they fall down for patanti adha because they have disregarded the lotus feet of Krishna. So that is the condition of this Mayavadi. So that's why it has been considered that Sajujya Mukti is negative. Now more graphically, we can describe it like this. Like this material nature is like a prison house. Now everyone in the material nature is imprisoned in this prison house. Now if somebody wants to get out of the prison house, he actually can get out by two different means. Either he can scale the walls of the prison house and run away, or dug a tunnel, or somehow or other run away from the prison. But this running away from the prison is not positive. It's actually negative. Although he is outside of the prison, although he managed to get out of the prison, but still he is not free. The police will be after him and he'll have to run, he'll have to hide in all kinds of strange places. And then, when the police catch him, then his sentence will be more severe. So this is a negative freedom, but there's a positive way of getting out of the prison. And what is that positive way? The positive way is that a person recognizes his defect. He realizes why he has been imprisoned. And he realizes that he disregarded the law of the king or the state. And then he appeals to the king. I made a mistake. I broke your law. Now I realize that I made a mistake and I give my word of honor. I take a vow that I'll never ever break your law. I'll just become a law-abiding citizen in your country. Then the king may release him. Then the king will say, okay, first the king may say, well, let us see whether he really means it. So the king informs the warden of the prison and asks him to watch this person if there is any change in his nature. And then, if the report is good, then the person may be released from the prison. The king may send the order that now release him. His consciousness has been rectified. He has become submissive and law-abiding. So, the same way, we are in the material nature, which is like a prison house, and we all are prisoners. And the cause of our prison is that we broke the law of the King of Kings, Krishna. We disregarded Krishna's law, and that's why you have fallen into the material nature, the prison house of material nature. And in this prison house, like in any other prison, we are being punished constantly. The prisoners are put into prison to get punished in order to rectify their consciousness. Their consciousness has been perverted. Their consciousness has become defective. And that's why they're being punished to straighten out or rectify their consciousness. Now, we are also in the same condition. We broke the law of Krishna, and that's why we are following this material nature, and in this material nature, we all are suffering constantly. Now, when some intelligent person, or more than intelligent, when some fortunate person becomes aware of that fact, that he is actually suffering, then he tries to be rid of this suffering. He tries to become free from this suffering. And if he does not come in contact with a proper teacher or a bona fide guru, if he is misled by some misconception, then he may think that, well, I am in this material nature and because of my being in the material nature, I am suffering. So by hook or by crook, somehow or other, let me get out of this material nature.
And he tries to get out of this material nature by some unnatural means, like digging a tunnel through this prison, or scaling the wall, climbing the wall. It's very, very strenuous, very troublesome to run away from the prison like that. So the same way, to get out of this material nature that way is also very, very difficult. If somebody tries to get out of the material nature by penetrating through through the coverings of Maya, it's very difficult. That's why Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, the doibi hesha gunamoyi mamo maya durataya. It is impossible to surmount this maya. And if somebody does it by chance or by dint of his own very, very severe hard endeavor, then what happens? Then he gets out of the material nature and apparently he becomes liberated. But actually it is even worse than being in the material. He is, first of all, this situation is not permanent. To be situated in Brahma Jyoti is not a permanent situation. He is going to fall down again. And when he falls down, or when he is pulled back to this material nature, then his punishment is going to become even more severe. Even more severe. So that's why this liberation, Shajidya Mukti, has been considered as a negative liberation. But other four are positive. They are Shamipa means
one who less than himself.
No, Shamipa.
Say for the Lord.
Say no. Shamipa. To be close to the Lord. Shamipa means to be close. So Shamipa liberation, by this liberation one comes in close, one gets a chance to associate with the Lord closely. Shaloka means? Very good. Shaloka means to be in the same planet with the Lord. And that means to be in Vaikuntha. All these liberations are actually Vaikuntha liberation. Sharupa means to have the same form as the Lord. And Shashti? Yeah, to have the opulence as the Lord Himself. Now these four are positive liberations. But the wonderful thing is that devotees don't want this liberation. Even these liberations devotees don't want. Devotees don't want this liberation. Why?
Because
there is no devotional service. No, there is devotional service. When you are in Vaikuntha, with Vishnu, you are rendering service. Especially in the line of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, devotees don't want this liberation.
There is no preaching?
Because devotees are already liberated. Say, we can say, the first one, devotees are already close to the Lord, isn't it? They are in the temple, the Lord is there, they are very close to the Lord, they are offering service to the Lord, they are dependent upon the Lord. So that's why devotees don't really separately aspire for liberation. That's why devotees simply want devotional service. Beyond that, they don't want it. And regarding that, there is a very nice example. I hope all of you read Chaitanya Charitamrita. No? You don't have it in French? No? Anyway, so there's a story, there's an incident. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was traveling to South India. After he took sannyas, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was traveling through South India. And in South India, there's a place called Udipi. Udipi. And that is the place of Madhvacharya's followers. Udipi. So, in there, some of Madhvacharya's followers are called Tattvavadi. They're very much involved with, involved in all kinds of rituals. Actually, as it is, these Madhva followers are quite into rituals, but these people are very much into rituals and so on and so forth. So when Mahaprabhu arrived there in Udipi, then these people did not take Chaitanya Mahaprabhu very seriously, because they saw that this man is a sannyasi, but his behavior is not like a sannyasi. He is not grave, or he is not into the rituals or so and so forth. He is just, he doesn't even study so much. He simply chants and dances, and he seems to be very frivolous. So they became a little negative about Chaitanya. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who had a very unique way of winning people over, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had a discussion with their acharyas, and he told, actually the acharya, he told him that, he told him to bless him and told him, why don't you give me some instructions? After all, I'm just a young sannyasi. I don't really, and you are so learned, you are such a wise man. You are such a wise man. So please give us some instruction. So then he started to describe his tattva, and he told Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that liberation is the ultimate goal of life. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted him to explain, to teach him with the philosophy. And this man instructed that liberation is the ultimate goal. Then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu quoted from Srimad Bhagavatam and some other scriptures where it has been said that if liberation is offered to the devotees, devotees do not accept it. Diyamanam na grihanti bina mat sevanam jana. Krishna himself is telling that diyamanam, even if it is offered, cha, although, na grihanti, do not accept, bina mat sevanam jana, without my service. So, my devotees do not want even liberation, even offered to them. Because they don't want anything besides my service. Another shloka Mahaprabhu quoted, I think this is from Krishna Karnamrita. This shloka says that mukti mukulitanjali shevate ashmin. Mukti means liberation personified. Mukti Devi. Mukti with fold, liberation with folded hands. Praise to the devotees that please allow us, please engage me in your service. Let me do something for you. So we can see that the liberation is eagerly waiting to serve the devotees. That means devotees do not surrender to liberation. On the other hand, liberation is eagerly waiting to receive the mercy of the devotees. So when Mahaprabhu quoted this shloka, then it became very clear to the acharya, and he was defeated. He realized that devotees do not want liberation. There is no need to aspire for liberation separately. Liberation has already been attained for a devotee, by a devotee. Okay, now I'll go back to this same point. There is this expression, koitava dharma, dharma prachita koitava atro. Now dharma means what?
religion. And Koitava means? Koitava means cheating or false. Now, what is this false religion? I was describing just a while ago. What is the false religion? No, false religion means the religion that is motivated by sense gratification. Some people worship Krishna. Accordingly, it seems that he is a very religious person. But at the back of his mind, he prays to Krishna that please give me a lot of money. Right? Please make me famous. Or please give me nice children. Like the recently we were discussing in Bhagavatam class, the demigods are praying to Krishna. Demigods are praying, but through their prayers, we could see that how demigods were not pure devotees. Why was that? Why we don't consider demigods to be pure devotees? You are answering. You are saying so many. Anyway, anybody else? Please raise your hand. Okay. Why? Because they're motivated by their material desires. They worship Krishna, but it is motivated by their material desires. And what they were praying to Krishna? Oh Krishna, Vritsra has driven us out of our kingdom. We lost everything. So you please come and kill Vritsra. That is their prayer. Although just before that, they're glorifying Krishna with all kinds of beautiful prayers. That, oh my Supreme Lord, you are the source of all creation and by your inconceivable potency, everything is maintained. And so many wonderful prayers. But then ultimately they say that now Vritsra has driven us out of our kingdom, so you please kill Vritsra so that we can enjoy in our kingdom. So this is the Karmakanda. Demigods are actually the Karmakandis. A little refined Karmakandis. So this way demigods are not pure devotees. Or anybody who has any desire for enjoying this material nature are not pure devotees. So a pure devotee is a person who is not at all motivated by his sense gratification, and he does not desire anything but pleasing Krishna. So dharma, literally the word dharma means the inherent quality of a substance. In Sanskrit, the word dharma means the inherent quality of a substance. Like fire is a substance. And what are the inherent qualities of fire? Wherever there is fire, there is heat. And also there is light. Can you imagine fire without heat and light? No. If you see, if there is some so-called fire, then actually it is not fire. Like fireflies gives out light, right? But do we call it fire? No, because it doesn't have heat. So wherever there is fire, there must be light and heat. So light and heat are the inherent qualities of fire, hence they are the dharma of fire. Or the burning ability to burn is the dharma of fire. Like another way of looking at it is, like electricity apparently doesn't show the light and heat, right? But when electricity is passed through some substance, then it is burned. Right? Like thunderbolt. When the thunder falls on somebody's head, what happens? He's immediately burned. The whole body becomes charred, black. I haven't seen, but I heard. When thunderbolt hits you, the body, because the thunderbolt is actually electricity. And electricity is subtle fire. Electricity is subtle fire. So fire has a burn ability, quality to burn. So that is the inherent quality of, or the dharma of fire, light and heat, or the ability to burn. Now, water is a substance. Now, what is the inherent quality of water?
Liquid.
Yeah, liquidity. Liquidity is the inherent quality of water. Now, when the water becomes solid, it does become solid, doesn't it? Then, does it remain as water? Then we call it water. Do we call it water? No, we call it ice. Or, when the water becomes evaporated, when the water evaporated, then it is steam. It is not water any longer. And as you said, the taste of water, like if you are very thirsty and somebody offers you some steam, will you get the taste of water? Or if somebody gives you a block of ice? No. Only when the ice is melted, or when the steam has become condensed, and then only it can quench your thirst. So this way, every substance has certain inherent qualities. And Atma is a substance, right? Spirit soul is what? A substance. And what is the inherent quality of spirit soul?
Service.
What?
Service.
Yes, both are correct. Yeah, that's a spiritual quality. The spirit soul is a spiritual substance, right? Spiritual sub, and what is the inherent quality of the spirit soul? To
love God.
And that is the dharma of the spirit soul. And unless and until a spirit soul becomes engaged in this dharma, then the spirit soul is not satisfied. Can never be satisfied. The spirit souls are trying to do so many things. Do you try to do so many things? To enjoy? Did you become satisfied?
Of course it can never be satisfied because the soul is
unlimited desire. But what if the soul becomes engaged in service to Krishna?
Unlimited service.
Well, you can get an unlimited service. You know the story of that ghost? One ghost came and told somebody that, look, I want to serve you. Now, whatever you want, I'll get for you. But on one condition, that you have to always keep me busy. You have to always keep me busy. So the man agreed. He said, wonderful, I'll give you enough service. So he said, now you build a palace for me. So the ghost immediately built a palace for him. Then he said, well, now you bring a lot of money for me. So the ghost immediately brought a lot of money. So the ghost was, he would desire something and the ghost would immediately bring it to him. Then he didn't have any more service to offer to the ghost. And the ghost actually told him that, if you can't offer me service, then I'll break your neck. And so then the man got really worried. Now the ghost is going to come and he doesn't have any service to give him. So he said, there was a pole, long, huge pole. So he said, the ghost came and said, give me some service. So he said, okay, you climb up the pole and climb down the pole. Then you climb up the pole, so this way, this is your next service. You climb up, and when you climb up on top, then you climb down to the bottom. So then the ghost got a service, an endless service. Now, if you do that, right, since your tendency is to be engaged in an unlimited service, you can become engaged in such unlimited service, climbing up the pole and down the pole. But will you be happy? Will you be satisfied?
No. But I don't think down climbing the pole is good for the world.
Then?
There's so many varieties
No, but in the material nature, people are engaged in so many service. Are they happy? Are they satisfied?
There is no benefit.
That's the point. Unless and until a person begins to love God, he cannot become satisfied. And why? Because that is the inherent desire of the human. So unless and until he becomes engaged, or unless and until he becomes situated in his inherent propensity, he cannot be satisfied. And unless and he cannot be satisfied, because then he is an unnatural state. Only when he is situated in his constitutional position, or only when he is engaged in his inherent propensity, then only he becomes situated in his constitutional position. And that brings him satisfaction. The way Prabhupada told us, the Prabhupada gave us the example of fish out of water. When the fish is on the land, you may offer him all the facilities of the land. Will the fish be happy? But when the fish is put back into the water, then immediately it becomes happy. The same way, we are in a foreign place. We actually belong to the spiritual nature. Spirit soul is a spiritual substance. So we belong to the spiritual nature. But this material nature is a foreign place. So that's why in the material nature, although we are getting so many facilities, you have your houses, you have your cars, you have your money, you have your friends, and so on and so forth, but still you are not happy. Why? Because what you actually want is not available here. And what you actually want? You want Krishna. So that's why the inherent quality of, inherent propensity of a living entity is to love Krishna, and that is the dharma of a living entity. A spirit soul's dharma is to love Krishna. But in order to love Krishna, we have to get to know Krishna. And that's why our endeavor is to know Krishna through associating with the devotees, coming in contact with the spiritual master, and studying the scriptures. And then as we get to know Krishna, the more we develop our love for him. So that is the real dharma, and any other activity besides this is called Koitava dharma, or cheating religion. So when one gives up this cheating religion and becomes situated in his original religion, dharma, then he